The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning. You're very welcome along to the programme. It is just approaching 4 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, the 3rd of June, 2026. How are you keeping today? It is Wednesday. It's going to take me a while to catch up, having been off. But anyway, it's great to be back with you. And we've another packed couple of hours for you. So stay tuned. You won't be disappointed. And we want you involved in the conversation as well. So whatever we've lined up for you, feel free to have your say. But also, if there's something that you want to talk about or some news you wish to pass on, good news, 086 60 25000. That's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25000. You can pick up the phone and give us a call if you wish to 074 91 25000 or email the show at comments@highlandradio.com. And if you want to watch the visualized presentation, you can go to YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, and watch at home on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, or across your mobile devices. And we're all over the Facebook pages as well. Just search Highland Radio. We are there. And there's subtitles as well, which is good. So maybe there's someone in your life that is hard of hearing, or their hearing is disimproving, and they want to make sure that they can still stay up to date with everything that's happening both here and afar. Well, you can get subtitles on the YouTube and Facebook streams as well, which is good. Some people avail of that, and which makes me very pleased. Let's have a look at some of the newspapers this morning. The Finn Valley Voice, they're serious about saving the environment out there in Killygordon. They're an example to the rest of us. 4 years ago, the Cake Group was awarded €300,000 in government grants to upgrade their premises environmentally. They used the money to install solar panels, heat pumps and new windows and doors. Now they're going to build on that grant of €85,000, the highest awarded in the county, under the Community Climate Action Programme Fund. This time they'll invest in heat pumps, LED upgrading and biodiversity planting. And they should go into form filling, because they're obviously fantastic at it, because they're able to benefit from those grants so well. Fantastic stuff. Well done. Best of luck to everyone who is sitting exams today. A record number of students will begin their Leaving and Junior Cert exams across the country today as efforts to tackle grade inflation continue. And it's a huge day for young people. As you get older, and we say this almost every year, you know, you understand that whilst it is important, it's not as important as you thought it was at that time. But for many of the young people heading into the exams today, it's like the be-all and end-all. This is just the... this is just everything to them, and rightly so, I suppose, as long as they put it into context of what it means really in your whole life. And all of the years in, from NINRA to national school to secondary school, all of that effort and all of that time, transition year where it applies, and all the ups and downs are all driven and condensed into a couple of weeks of exams, which is not fair. Grading done over years, don't get me wrong, but still there's an awful lot of pressure. And of course, you know, people can only do what the best that they can do. That's all you can do, is the best that you can do and achieve the best for what you can do, not necessarily what other people can do. And the good thing nowadays as well is there's so many blooming options. Firstly, not everyone has to go to third level. It's great if you do, but we often don't recognise that many people don't. And those people are very important as well, because, you know, they go straight into the workforce often and do really, really very, very important jobs. But obviously then there's more schemes and just different ways to get to where you want to be. So whilst it's hugely important, of course, and not wishing anyone to take their eye off the ball, it's not the be-all and end-all either. And just do the best that you can. That's all you can do. Maximise your potential and be calm. You'll think far better if you are calm. But as I say, God forbid, even if it doesn't go as you expect, there are so many options nowadays. Well, the State Examination Commission said the number of candidates due to sit the 2026 state exams has topped 146,000 for the first time. The total number of 146,553 students entered represents an increase of 6,096, or 4%, compared to 2025. They include 66,911 Leaving Cert candidates, 4,787 final year Leaving Cert certification applied candidates, and 74,855 junior cycle candidates. The most significant increases are in the numbers entered for the Leaving Cert programme, which were up 9%, and in the Leaving Cert Applied programme, up 6%. The very, very best of luck to everyone doing their exams today. On to the Irish Independent, and I wonder in a number of years are we going to see record low numbers of people doing the Leaving Certs, because every action has a reaction, and for whatever reason, the birth rate in this country has dropped 18% in 10 years. That is remarkable. That's a close on 20% drop in people being born in 10 years. That's remarkable. I mean, is it all down to the cost of living? Is it all down to the housing crisis? I mean, I'd be very interested, without encroaching on your private life, to hear from people who've said, right, we can't have a family. Like, is it the case that you've put off having a family because of the cost of living or the housing crisis? Because, you know, we all know, don't we, families. Mine was one of those families. We had seven children. I didn't have seven children. I was one of seven children. Ashleen's family is one of 13 children. You know, there's big families everywhere. But mum and dad didn't stop because of money or the size of the house. You know, there were three bedrooms and you had to fit the seven in. And, you know, instead of everyone having something different to eat, like it's often the case nowadays, you know, you all ate out of the one pot. I'm not old manning it, right? But that was the case. So previous generations, they didn't worry about money. They were having their children and scraping by, but there was no luxury. There was no bedroom for every child in the house, or even, you know, a bedroom for every two children. You just made do. You just got by. And so it's just, whilst I'm going to read this article, and it's interesting, if that is the case, that people are not having kids because of the cost of living and the housing crisis, at what point then did things change from previous generations, where obviously that wasn't the consideration, or else there would have been two, one, no kid families, right? So something changed. Right, so young people are blaming the twin housing and cost of living crisis for taking away their ambitions for parenthood after registered birth dropped about 18% in the last decade. New Central Statistics Office data highlighted how Ireland's registered births dropped almost 18% from 2005 to 2025, while the fertility rate also fell below the replacement level with migration when migration isn't taken into account. So that means more people dying than being born. Activist and trainee secondary school teacher Leah Whelan, 29, told the Irish Independent, "All my friends are in their late 20s or early 30s, and none of us have kids. That's because we're still living at home or in unsuitable accommodation. We know that's not a place to start a family. It's a reality. It's a really sad situation for people who really want to have a family." And again, I don't mean this in any way judgy, but, you know, if you really wanted a family, would you hold off on it for those reasons? I'm sure you would, wouldn't you? I don't know. I'm not of that generation any longer. But if you have anything to say in relation to that, 08660 25000. I'm not sure is created. I'm not sure it. I'm certain it's not the reason why the birth rate has dropped, but it is interesting to note, because something very significant happened in this country over the last 10 years. And since 2019, abortion was legalised. And since then, just short of 50,000 abortions have taken place in this country. So is it a case too? Obviously then, because this wasn't happening before. It's the cost of living and housing crisis. Do people feel that it's forcing them to make that decision? I don't know. It has to be a factor on some level or other. The NCT, you know, a lot of people have to get their NCTs, worried about the NCTs. A lot of you think it's a money-making racket, you know, and I've just got information today that proves that what you were thinking was wrong. You're a cynic, you're cynical, and you need to cop yourself on. The NCT is not a money-making racket. They're barely scraping by. It's about road safety. It's about making sure your car is safe and good for the road. But reading on here, the company operating Ireland's National Vehicle Testing Service is earning average weekly revenues of around €2.25 million per week. The jump in revenues follows the first increase in the cost of an NCT since 2012, after the RSA greenlighted the rise from €55 to €60, and the price of a retest from €28 to €40 on January 1st, 2025. The latest accounts from App Plus Inspection Services Unlimited, the Spanish-owned company that operates the NTC system, stated pre-tax profits increased by 7% from 6.59 million in 2024 to 7.6 million in 2025. So they got a bump up in the cost of doing it, the cost of the test and the retest, and it just increased their profits from over 6 million to over 7 million. So obviously it wasn't because they were just scraping by. Revenues increased by 14.44 million or 14% from 103.2 million to 117.67 million as the NCT firm completed a record-breaking number of tests last year. I wonder how they kept a record number. But the point being is this, if I don't think, honestly, all jokes aside, I don't think something that we're obliged to do and is supposed to be about road safety should be so profitable. I understand a company has to make money, but that increase just increased their profits. They weren't breaking even or losing money. That increase actually just bolstered their profits by an extra half a million. That's the after-tax profits. That's the walk-away money. And, you know, you would love... Well, anyway, I have to be careful what I say because I have to be careful what I say. Michael Healy-Ray, he's blamed his brother for events which led to his resignation as a Minister of State in the wake of the fuel protests. This is in the Irish Daily Mirror. Mr. Healy-Ray said Kerry, which both men represent as TDs, was served badly by comments from his brother, Danny Healy-Ray, which led to the end of their deal with the coalition of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, along with other independents. Both Healy-Rays voted against the government in a confidence motion in April, with Michael resigning as Minister of State with responsibility for forestry at the Department of Agriculture. Danny was later removed as a member of the Agriculture Committee, Michael said yesterday. An interview Danny gave to Radio Kerry at the time cost Kerry the Ministry in Agriculture, adding, "This is an absolute fact and it is very disappointing." Is there trouble in the Healy camp? More and more people now are getting married abroad. I hope none of you have booked this company for a wedding in Tenerife. As I say, it's an option for lots of people now. I don't hear too many doing in Tenerife, but anyway, one of the owners of a wedding planning business in Tenerife that closed suddenly last month has said there is no point in couples who paid the company tens of thousands of euro chasing their money because it has nothing left to give. This is in the Times. Lars Jensen, who ran weddings in Tenerife with his wife Claire Lopez, told the locally produced Tenerife Pod that about 40 couples had been affected by the firm applying for insolvency. He suggested tens of thousands of euro had been refunded through chargeback processes operated by banks and credit card providers. So as I say, you would be well aware at this stage, if you had booked through this company, that your wedding is in doubt over there. But I do hope no one across the Northwest fell for that. If you did, you can let us know how you feel about that. And finally, in the Irish Sun, and going to the sports pages, excuse me, there was a lot of controversy around the country about Jim McGuinness and whether or not he'd face a ban following incidents during the Kerry Donegal game. He didn't. There was a lot of sort of suggestion that a precedent had been set previously with a manager, and that you know, those that want to see Donegal fail wanted Jim McGuinness to receive a ban, etc., etc. Well, Jarlath Burns, he's been commenting on it, and he admits that managers putting their hands on opposing players is an act that should be condemned. But the GEA president defended the decision not to ban Donegal boss Jim McGuinness after he appeared to push Dermot O'Connor during his half-time fracas, or the half-time fracas that marred his side's All-Ireland SFC first-round win over Kerry. I doubt it marred it, but anyway. Burns said, regardless of the merits or otherwise of any of these events, it's wrong for a manager to go onto a field and touch any player or any official. It doesn't matter what the circumstances are. McGuinness seemed to be in danger of being... I'm going to go inside here now because I just want to see... He contextualised it a bit better, but I don't want to misquote him. Let me see what he said then. Obviously, Gerard Brennan, he was handed a 12-week suspension after receiving a red card for his transgression. McGuinness obviously didn't. Burns said, you have to remember The referee was in the middle of that. The fourth official saw it as well. The referee referred to it in his report and left it at that. If the Gerard Brennan event hadn't happened, nobody would have been focused on that. But I heard people saying the GEA painted ourselves into a corner. No, we didn't. We applied the rules. That's all we do. We just apply the rules. And I think that's fair enough. And I think that's a common sense response to also from Jarlath Burns, who clearly understands what was driving a lot of the calls for Jim McGuinness's to be banned in the first place. It was just really people upset about Brennan's ban. While I was off, actually, I noticed on our news webpage, which was great to see. You might remember we've covered this now for a couple of years and we were back at it again. Problems with local link emergency services potentially getting through a very important road in Inishowen, close to Shrove Beach. And we often talked about, and I couldn't understand why nothing had been done to indicate to people visiting the area that you can't park here, mate, be it no parking signs or double yellow lines. Well, very shortly after that conversation that we had with the disgruntled bus operator, who just is trying to get people from A to B, yellow lines were painted. Now, if you're in that area, I presume that's good news, isn't it? Obviously, there'll have to be a level of enforcement, but I think most right-minded people won't park on double yellow lines when they're there. You will get the odd person that might, but I thought that was a really great bit of action by Donegal County Council. Fair play to them in that regard. So that's hopefully a problem that will be alleviated going forward. We're going to stay on the roads, actually, because Alice Lynch, owner of Maggie's Tavern in St Johnston, is back on with us. Good morning to you, Alice. How are you keeping?
Great, Greg. Thank you very much for having me.
No problem at all. And it's really a catch-up with you because a petition calling for action on the L23742, people will know it as the Backlone Road in St Johnston, almost 500 signatures from concerned residents. And I remember speaking to you about this at the time, Alice. People very concerned. So just so people can catch up, describe the problems that currently persist on the Backlone Road and its impact on locals.
Okay, well, thank you very much. So the problems that we have is that at one particular area, if your car comes down and you're meeting, say, the local link bus, you have to reverse the whole way back. You have to reverse 300 metres. So we just wanted a lay-by on either side, just wee lay-bys. And I have to say, and it has been very dangerous with people falling into the hedge and one thing and another. And
I think
anyway,
at that time, Alice, too, you were very fair. The locals were very fair. You weren't looking necessarily for a dual carriageway. It was just common sense lay-bys where people could come in. And you talked about the width of the road. I've noticed now with the great growth we have at the moment, these roads are getting narrower and narrower, aren't they? And you just don't know what's a brick wall and what's a branch or what's just foliage. But anyway, you said there's some good news. Hit me with it.
The good news is, and thanks to the media attention, that the council now are sending out forms for us to be involved in the community involvement scheme. So whereby the local people will provide tractors or whatever to help, and then the council then will be out to do whatever. I'm not fully sure on what they're going to be doing, but it's a great step forward. So we will then be involved, whether we have to do a bit of fundraising for it or whatever, I don't know. But we Claire McGeever, who is the senior executive engineer, just wrote last night or yesterday evening an email to me saying that we were granted this, subject, of course, to funding. So I have sent her back an email to say to send on the forms. I don't know what else it will entail, but to me, it's a good, positive step, and I'll be able to keep you informed on it.
Yeah, and I hope I presume, judging by the wording from the senior executive engineer, that it's subject to council funding. But really what they're saying here is that this community involvement scheme, you submit a form, locals can work with the council and get this done, really, one way or other. It's not, you're not, as I say, you're not looking for a bypass. It's just common sense pull-ins, really, that allows the free movement of traffic.
That's it. And that the tractors and the buses and those people that use that road, that the lay-bys can be provided. So we're absolutely delighted and very thankful for people coming on board. Like, I have over 500 signatures. and the newspapers came involved, and yourselves when I had the interview with yourself, Greg. So with everybody coming on board, we've got the kick up, and we're delighted with the council's response now, and we're looking forward to moving forward.
All right, thanks very much. Thank you very much for that. I do appreciate your time, Alice Lynch there. By the way, if you were in a community that, and there have been work like this done, if you were successful in applying to the community involvement scheme, and as I say, I know it has happened, and you were able to work with the council and provide lay-bys or whatever it might be, can you get in touch with us and give us an idea of how that worked the cost of the community, or if any cost was involved? Let me know, 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. So if you're in a community that successfully applied for this type of work under the community involvement schemes, you can certainly give community of St. Johnstone some guidance there. And I'd really like the info as well, just to understand it better for future interviews. So 07491 25000, if you want to give us a call. I was talking about the reason why we've seen an 18% drop in births in this country. And I would say you could probably dig into those figures as well. And, you know, with emigration and migration, you know, I'd say the demographics of those children being born have changed dramatically as well too. So it would be interesting to look into that. But an 18% drop in 10 years. This caller says, though, because I was wondering back in the day, you know, families didn't seem to worry about necessarily having a house with a room for everyone. I'm not saying that's what people want nowadays, or, you know, having the money to have kids. You just have kids. Well, this caller says years ago they did worry about money, but they had no contraception. Today, many young people have emigrated because of terrible economic policies. And, you know, you're probably right. But, you know, in terms of planning, we're far more inclined to plan now. Is that a good or a bad thing? You know, we are having women now spending their entire adult life taking a pill every single day. And, you know, that's generally what's happening, if the truth be told. It's not necessarily the guys that are taking the action there. The triple lock. Hi, Greg. The concerns, the triple lock and the EU pact on migration, I firmly believe that a referendum should be held on these matters. A single referendum could address both questions. These decisions carry significant implications for Ireland, and the Irish people deserve the opportunity to vote on them. It's concerning that a government can advance legislation of this scale without meaningful public scrutiny, regardless of whether one agrees or disagrees with the measures. The triple lock, certainly, I think the migration pact, is that not in now? But anyway, it doesn't mean that a referendum couldn't be had on it. But the triple lock is it's a big deal, especially given the implications of it and the potential implications of it. And I think really, I don't think there's been enough debate on it. We've tried, and we will continue to have debates on it. But it does feel referendum-y, if you know what I'm saying. And I think really, actually, perhaps maybe, you don't put something to the people if you're maybe concerned you might lose it. But I think we could widen out a referendum on neutrality a little bit further as part of the triple lock debate. But it is something we're going to return to. Don't worry about that. I see a document released by government. I've yet to go through it yet about, I think it sounds very pro-data centre and talking about, you know, the economic benefit of data centres in Ireland. But did you know there's a data centre planned for Letterkenny, a 100 megawatt campus located on the Letterkenny Business Park? It's been acquired from Atlantic Hub, and it's to do with AI. It's an AI-ready sustainable infrastructure project. There's not a ton of detail in relation to it. I do know it's going to be in the Letterkenny, or proposed to be in the Letterkenny Technology Park. But interesting, I'd be interesting to get more documentation in relation to that to find out. I mean, these data centres require a great deal of fresh water, don't they? What implications might that have for the water supply or the energy in this region? And I think we're going to see more. I was at a conference recently where they talked about the Northwest, because of its climate and access to water, etc., potentially being a future hot spot for data centers. And I don't know if you've seen what's happening in America at the moment, but there's data centers going everywhere, while home off some of them. But anyway, we shall see whether the Northwest becomes a hub for data hubs, because obviously once the energy infrastructure is resolved, the Northwest is looking very, very attractive. But up until now, I don't believe we have any, except this one that's planned for the Letterkenny Technology Park. It's in the early planning stages, but it's hard to get info because of the nature of the planning process for data centres. But we shall see. I'm sure there's some interesting questions to be teased out there. Let us go to Strabane now, and Councillor Jason Barr joins him now. Good morning to you, Councillor.
Good morning, Greg.
Thank you for your time. Now, you've made contact with the Communities Minister, Gordon Lyons, and it's in relation to a constituent of yours, but this is one example of, you know, what is happening. So tell us the situation this gentleman finds himself in.
Yeah, so there is a gentleman in Strabane, but there's also three separate families that are facing us at the minute, Greg, within Strabane town, and across, there's other families also affected across the council area. But basically the way it works is that the housing executive at the minute have a policy. And their current policy, which limits the number of tenancy that can then be succeeded. So hypothetically, Greg, if I lived in a house with my mother and father and I cared for them and then my father passes away, that succession then goes to my mother of the house. So they haven't got a joint succession. It's known as a separate succession. So when my father dies, it goes to my mother. And then if my mum passes away, then the succession does not pass to me, even if I have lived in the house for 30 or 40 years. Which then means that I am in the process then of being evicted.
You're effectively homeless.
But... Yes, effectively they make you homeless. And this is where it baffles me, Craig. You know, we're sitting in the middle here of a housing crisis and they're going to make people homeless to put other people under the house. You know, and it effectively is a baffling, to be honest. But this is why I've called now Minister Lyons to freeze all upcoming evictions and freeze any upcoming court dates to give the families a bit of headspace until this policy needs reviewed immediately. No, one other thing that has to be considered here is that the financial cost associated with evictions, the legal proceedings, property clearance, refurbishing works, and then the reletting process can cost thousands of pounds to the taxpayer. And this represents a significant burden on the public.
Yeah, but Jason, can I put an opposing view, if you don't mind? And this is notwithstanding fully understanding the stress on these families. If it were the case that your mum and dad had three kids and two of them moved out or moved away, very sadly they passed away, and you were left on your own in a house in Strabane with three or four bedrooms or three bedrooms or two bedrooms and a small box room, You know yourself too, the pressure on the housing waiting list in your own area. And behind you, there could be a family, with two or three children themselves who are effectively homeless, whilst you would be in a three-bedroomed house in Strabane. Do you understand that, whilst I understand that you're focusing on this, these families' situations, really, though, do you not have to be a little bit dispassionate and look at the entire housing waiting list and ensure that all housing meets the needs of that list?
Well, that's something that I agree on in a sense, Greg, but we have to also realise that the housing executive are putting single people into three-bed houses currently.
Well, that makes no sense at all. That's a serious reflection of the
housing. I'm aware of that happening throughout Strabane. As you say, when there's waiting lists so high and families of waiting on four beds and three beds and can't get in them. But I think on this particular case, Greg, where the succession comes in, there's a lot of history, there's a lot of community value to this, and I do think that Minister Lyons needs to take this very seriously and make sure that the current policy gets a full review and that the freeze on any current evictions and any court cases has to stop immediately to give this the full attention that is needed.
It has to be because of the way demographics are going, it has to be looked at though, Jason, because we could find ourselves with a highly underpopulated housing stock, if you know what I mean, where the housing stock's not meeting the needs of the community. I mean, this is three cases. And if they were all sort of single people or couples without kids, for an example, it's not serving the community to have them in those houses.
No, it may not be, but it's the matter of fact of the community and the history of the house. No, that it's within the family name.
I understand all
and
that.
And I believe, and I firmly believe that they should, the succession, if somebody has lived, if a son or daughter has lived in the house, cared for the parents, and they still live there, to me, they should be entitled to hold on to that house.
Mm.
You know, instead of costing the taxpayer thousands of pounds to get it all stripped back to a shell, and then they make them basically homeless for them, then they sit on a waiting list for that waiting list just to get bigger and bigger, you know. So,
hypothetically, if more suitable accommodation was supplied, would these families be likely to, say, for instance, it was a single man on his own, do you think that person might move to a one-bedroomed apartment or house if the council had that available to them to free up the larger premises for a family, for an example? Or is this about, you know, I've lived here 40 years, this is my house and I ain't going anywhere?
Well, that would be my personal view. If I was in that situation, Greg, I would like to remain within the house.
Mm.
You know, if that was my parents' home and all the history of the family has been built there, I would like to remain in that house in the community that I grew up in. Like, you don't know where you're going to be put with the house executive.
Yeah.
If they offer you one bed. But as I say, a whole review of the house executive's needed. Like, the house executive can't be seen to be putting single people later in the three-bedroom houses now and then telling somebody, oh, you need to move out because you're a single person and this house is needed for a free bed, even though maybe 100 yards down the road, they've already given the house. Like, for example, the new Adria site in Strabane Beach Mount Village there, you know, I think there's well over 200 houses been built there. I know of a few people in there that are sitting a single person in a two or three bed house.
Mm, but that's bad, you know, in itself. So, I mean, that's crazy.
That's what I'm saying. So the house executive can't be saying, you know, oh, this is needed for a family. Well, what about the house that you gave to a single person a couple of weeks ago?
Right,
you know,
okay.
When there's more history and stuff involved in the house that they're trying to evict somebody from. And if somebody going through grief and somebody having to deal with grief, and then having to deal with us on top of it, you know, it's a lot of stress, a lot of mental health that can put on family.
It really needs to be dealt with incredibly sensitively, I understand. Jason, listen, thanks for your time. I do appreciate it.
No problem.
That's Councillor Jason Barr. So a couple of talking points there. Do you agree with Jason that it is your home and you should be allowed to stay in it? Do you believe that, you know, if it were a single person, for an example, they should have to accept a one-bed apartment or house if it's offered to them? Or do you believe that that's their family home and they're entitled to stay there? What do you think? 086 60 25,000, from the north, 00353 86 60 25,000. It's fair enough, says a listener, that the family should be moved to a smaller place, but the council should have a duty of care to provide that place first. But and it was a hypothetical, but I put that hypothetical to the councillor who suggested that, you know, that's that person's home and they should be allowed to stick to it. Ireland is a neutral country, says the listener, and I want us to stay this way. I don't want to see my grandchildren or great-grandchildren going out to fight just because we upset Trump or Netanyahu. Yeah, we're not politically neutral. When I say we, you know, I'm not talking about us as individuals. I'm talking about the government that leads this country. They don't even pretend to be politically neutral. And in fact, I don't think there is a party in Ireland that wants Ireland to be politically neutral. I don't think Sinn Féin, obviously, are quite vocal on international matters. Who else is there? I don't know what the situation is with Aint Do. Are they politically neutral, where they would like us to be truly neutral? I don't know. We shall see. So, in other words, there is no political party out there that I know of that has certainly caught my attention by saying that they want us to be both military and politically neutral. But the triple lock mini is a slippery slope to us joining armies, etc. Knives in this country, says a listener, if someone is carrying a knife, they shouldn't be allowed out on bail and should be kept in jail and punished. If they carry knives in their own country, they should stay there. Knives in Ireland should be illegal. Again, let us not forget, there's a lot of knife crime in this country from all different sections of the community, all sections of the community, for that matter. I wouldn't allow yourself to be convinced by certain online accounts that it's only one demographic that's responsible for it, because if you want a list of examples, I can give you that. And that's not to criticise anyone. It's just to say, listen, you're intelligent. You must understand that knife crime is a problem across all demographics in this country. Hi, Greg. On the issue of GAA, the difference was that Gerard Brennan ran up furiously and grabbed the back of the jersey of the player as the ref All the refs, the person was wearing black and fell to the ground and was only stopped by staff. Jim only tried to stop a tussle and not start it like Gerard Brennan. Of course, yes, someone ended up on the ground. That comes in from Kevin. Yeah, we agree, Kevin. Me and Oisin and others have debated this on air. And two very, very different situations. But the people that want to bring Donegal down wanted to try and make out that the Gerard Brennan situation was the same as the Jim McGuinness situation, and we know that's not the case. Greg, years ago there were big families, but bear in mind families all worked on the land together. Fields of potatoes, cabbage and turnips, all natural food, and cows provided milk and butter, but now everyone depends on the shop. All right, is that what's changed? Good morning, Greg. What happened was the government and feminists spent the last two decades telling women staying at home and rearing kids was bad. Get out to work and earn a wage. All women should be independent. That's what they told the women. Lots of women will be growing old and lonely. I do understand where you're coming from, but I think it's women that says we don't want to be stuck in the house. I don't think that we're told to. You still have a choice. The problem is with the cost of living, that, you know, both people have to work. And having kids as well, you almost need three people earning to pay for childcare and everything else. Long ago, there was no mortgage. We didn't get anything unless they could pay for it. Now mortgages for everything and trying to keep up with the Joneses, and you can't afford to have children, trying to work to pay for everything and holidays in between, says the listener, which points to lifestyle choices, which is fine. Greg, you're right about the NCT profits. The National Broadband Scheme is the same. The National Broadband Scheme is the same. It's owned by a Spanish company, and wait till you see their profits when their rollout is complete. Shocking that Ireland's owns no shares in it. There is an Irish interest in the National Broadband. I'll double check that because I've spoken to the Irish people involved in that. Back to birth rates before a break. Braddock has done great research worldwide on falling birth rates. He argues primarily that the enhanced advancement of 4G smartphone technology is the primary reason for lowering the birth rate in developed and developing countries. The birth rate in Ireland fell from 65,909 last year to 54,125, a fall of 11,000. Meanwhile, the figures released by the Department of Health show the total of 10,852 abortions were carried out in Ireland, which represents a record high since abortion was legalised in 2018. You seem to be given two reasons for the same issue. Like, I'm open to talk about anything, but how in God's name is 4G smartphone technology stopping people from having children? You know, it's a choice. It's not because bits and bobs aren't working. That's always the case. And, you know, it's very difficult and very stressful for those involved. But these are people are making choices not to. It's got nothing to do with fast internet on your mobile phone. So someone mentioned about the ownership of the National Broadband Ireland company. So it's called NBI, National Broadband Ireland. And I didn't wish to contradict. I just didn't have the info. But as I try and do, get the right info. So the call is quite right. 80%, the company's 80% owned by the Pan-European Infrastructure Investment Manager, Asterion Industrial Partners. The remaining 20% is held by the founding shareholders, Granahan McCourt and Yakida Limited. So Asterion Industrial Partners, they are Madrid-based, Spain, as my listener quite rightly pointed out. Granahan McCourt, it's an international technology, media and telecommunications investor led by David McCourt. David McCourt been on with us, Caroline. The name's very familiar. David McCourt of NBI. Has he? I think so. Anyway. And Yakida Limited holds the remaining fractional interest alongside the founding shareholders. So there you go. Now, Lisa Lynch joins me on the programme of the well-renowned and respected Lisa Lynch Photography. And Lisa, I'm so sorry to be speaking to you under these circumstances. How are you keeping?
Look, I'm okay, Craig. I just still a bit shocked at the minute.
Right. Okay. Well, we're going to get it out there and see if anyone has any information that might help. So where is your business based and what met you when you landed into work yesterday morning?
I am based in Carlisle Road, so 34 Carlisle Road. So it's just halfway up Carlisle Road. And I had just pulled in that morning, obviously to start my day, and realised my equipment had been stolen.
This is your photography equipment and high-end expensive stuff. I mean, you know, none of us will ever have a camera probably that would cost how much one of your lenses does.
Yeah, no, definitely. I know as I was saying, there are a couple of guys, it took me a year just to even get one of them lenses, you know, to save up for it. So it's thousands of pounds worth just gone. That's my livelihood. You know, it's devastating. It really is.
Now, police and forensics are involved, and hopefully CCTV will be gone through, etc. But what our listeners can help with is if they happen to be on the Carlisle Road in Derry between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. on Monday, the 1st of June. Any information at all, I'm sure, would be greatly appreciated, Lisa.
It would, definitely. Even if it's car cameras or anything, you know, driving up and down that street, anything that would be amazing. You know, the community has been great in regards to they let me borrow equipment and stuff to keep me going. And, you know, people have said that, you know, if I need anything. So everybody's just been great in helping. But if anybody has any information in regards to being up and down that street, that time of the day would be amazing if it could come forward.
It's very unlikely that this equipment, this high-end equipment, is of use to those who stole it. So obviously then they try and monetize it, pass it on. Now, wherever you are listening to this, either sides of the border or wherever it might be, keep an eye out for, you know, good quality camera equipment landing up on Facebook Marketplace or whatever it might be. Is there any information about the equipment itself that can help us keep an eye out for you, Lisa?
Yeah, well, it's all Nikon equipment. I don't know, like, I know it's there's two cameras, two lenses, a flash and then a trigger. And a camera bag itself was taken. So all Nikon. If they try and sell it in separate, then it's not going to, I don't know how it'll work in that sense, but if it was sold in bulk, then it's all Nikon. There's a D780, there's a D610, there's a Nikon 24-70mm lens, and then a Nikon 24-105mm lens, and then a newer, it's called a newer flash as well, and a Godox trigger. So that's the names of all the equipment that was stolen.
And you know, it's a relatively small market here for that kind of high end equipment. Yeah. So it could be hard for these culprits to pass this on. Maybe they might hear this or read your Facebook post or what have you, and leave it back. You know, maybe they don't realise that this is an individual person. This is their livelihood. They're trying to support themselves and a family. You know, it's going to be hard for you to shift it on. Don't dump it somewhere. Leave it somewhere and let people know where it is so you can get it back and get back to work.
Yeah, that would be great. You know, that would be amazing. But I don't see it happening.
No, like,
I really don't.
Unlikely.
I don't know. It does. And if it does ever come back, it'll probably be damaged to the point where it's unusable as well. So I'm hoping not, but here we can hope.
All right. OK, well, listen, Lisa, I hope everything gets resolved for you. Thankfully, people have been so kind to you. And we do hope that police can catch whomever's involved, or if people in the at the public have information to pass it on to the PSNI in Derry. But for now, thank you for joining us. And I really do genuinely hope it gets sorted soon.
Great, Craig. Thank you so much for having me.
Bye-bye. That's Lisa Lynch, owner of Lisa Lynch Photography. The info I have is that this incident happened sometime between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. on Monday on the Carlisle Road in Derry. Obviously, the police are investigating. Forensics are on scene. But that kind of equipment will be hard to shift on, I think, because, as I say, it's a small community that deals in that high-end stuff. So maybe they'll leave it back. Maybe they have a heart. Who's to say? It doesn't sound like it, but you just never know. excuse me. Greg, can you tell me? Excuse me, I'm so sorry. Greg, can you tell me why I can't get through to the local revenue office in Letterkenny? Although the office is supposed to be open from 9:30 a.m. until 1 o'clock, but when I ring, there's a message saying this number cannot be reached. Let me check into that for you. When I say me, I mean me and the team here. On the issue of housing, the council in my area emptied a council house after a death with no communication with the wider family, and that house has remained empty since. I could never understand the rush to clear it out. Yeah, I know what you're saying, and that's sounds like the family home too, which would make it even more difficult that it's lying there a shell of itself with all the memories that it still contains. Back to the GAA. Was it not half-time when the ruckus started by Kerry? Aren't managers allowed on the field at that time to pep-talk their players in a circle? Jim was trying to defuse the row, but a Kerry player came close to him, so he had to move him away and told him to get back out of the dugout so he could help the bloodied player. The ref called both managers and he said he was giving Burns a red card and to get both their teams out of the dugout. Yeah, and you know what? It's done and dusted. The reason I brought it back up again, I just thought it was interesting to hear the head of the GAA commenting on it. But yeah, I think you've outlined it pretty much there. A lot of you texting in on birth rates. The birth rate issue is quite simple if you actually take a second to think about it. As people get more intelligent and more self-interested, the interest in having children drops as people are more concerned with living their lives than raising the next generation. Better access to birth control enables this, so more and more people are choosing to spend on themselves because to them, there's no benefit in having kids, just costs and a lot of free time. Then on top of that, you have the compounding crisis of housing and the cost of living on top of that as well for basically the last 20 years. And you have those that are willing now unable to afford to. But is there not something in having children that it's that draws you to it, or you feel you must, rather than going, well, you know, I mean, like, it's great to go out when you're in your 30s and 40s, but a lot of people, I think, would also like to be sharing their lives with the next gen. I don't know. Let me know. Hi, Greg. Could you wish the students sitting exams the best of luck? Thinking on those in Mulroy especially, we are very proud of them. And we're proud of them all, but I understand where you're coming from. Can you say a big happy 62nd wedding anniversary to our parents, Desi and Teresa, in Cree, Calais from... No, they're actually Cree, aren't they? Desi and Teresa Cree, Calais. They're in Clay from, sorry about this, Connell, Derek, Niall and Gemma. I've made a hames of it. I'm going to do this one more time, right? Can you say a big happy 62nd wedding anniversary to our parents, Desi and Teresa Cree, Calais, from Connell, Derek, Niall and Gemma. Right, we got there in the end. I'm joined on the programme now by Christy Murray. Good morning to you, Christy. How are you keeping with everything that's going on? I'm sure you're beside yourselves, as is the rest of the family.
We're at a loss at the moment, so this is why I'm on. I was speaking to the family. My nephew runs train yesterday, and I thought I'd use my leverage as Donegal Piper to try and get word out to the eastern seaboard and be out walking or anything to keep an eye out, just to have eyes out.
Now, Ronan, Ronan is your sister Anne's son. And he's been missing now for 20 days, missing down in the Dublin area. So talk to us about what we know about the last time he was seen, where he was, and so on, Christy.
Well, it's quite difficult to put together, but on the 14th of May was the last time the leap card was used. And timelines is quite difficult. We think Thursday afternoon was the last time that he used a leap card. There's been no bank transactions or anything since that. He took a bus, we think, out to Hoff. He took photographs days beforehand. We think there were clues into what he was thinking. And we have had his picture up the last 20 days now, and we're not getting a lot of any information back on that. We're fairly sure what's happened, that he is probably in the water into the Irish Sea, and the trajectory of the currents and stuff, he could be anywhere. It's a massive area. So my brothers and nephews and ourselves have been up and down, along with boat clubs and jet skis, divers, guards, and covering the area. In fact, today my two brothers and two nephews are hired a boat out to go to Lambay Island to cover it in drones. And that's where we are.
And such is the scale of the amount of area that needs searching. You need everyone, really, you know, if they're on the sea or if they walk along beaches or what have you, to keep an eye out for anything that might look out of place and to let the authorities know straight away. And of course, this is going to be focused on the east coast, Christy, isn't it?
Yeah, that's great. And for nobody to take any chances, it's just if you see something, you ring the Garda or the get words in my head now.
No, it's okay. People know the emergency services. It doesn't matter who you ring.
Emergency service on that day, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's been just 20 days of an absolute nightmare for Anne and you and the rest of the family, Christy.
Yeah, it's just trying to get closure. So it is. It's at this stage. Yeah. And every day you start to hope and then it's like a massive long wake. Mm. People are very good. Now, I must say the Irish people are just brilliant. So they're calling out the house. There's a lot of food and companionship. And so there's one man I want to thank, John Joe Boland from Chrysler Diving Club. Mm. He got me in touch with boat clubs and we've had abseilers up from Kerry. So just, nobody's asking for, they just help us. So.
And I think really at this stage, Christy, you just need Ronan home.
Yeah, that's exactly what we need. And just hope.
Right, we'll obviously share it out again on our socials and ask everyone to share it so it reaches those on the East Coast as well, and everyone can sort of have their eyes peeled for anything that looks out of the ordinary and call your local Garda station or whatever it might be if anything is spotted in that area. But we have to sort of try and push the message out for the Northwest onto the East Coast as well because it's a small country and it'll reach the people that it needs to reach. Christy, listen, we're really thinking on you and the family. It's just awful and it's this purgatory that yous are in. You have this realisation, but until such time as Ronan's brought home, it just is an enduring nightmare. And I'm so sorry, Christy, for everything you're going through.
I appreciate, Greg, you giving me time this morning just to get the word out there.
All right, we're thinking on you and we'll get the word out on our socials as well. Thanks, that's Christy Murray there. So Ronan's been missing for 20 days. They believe he entered the Irish Sea at Howth Head. And obviously, listen, we're a northwest-based station, but we're a tiny island. So if you can get onto our socials or wherever you see Ronan's picture, for that matter, and just get the message out. And the focus, it seems, from what Christy's saying, the focus is, you know, any water users on the East Coast or any people that are inclined to walk our beautiful beaches and cliffs and what have you, just to keep an eye out for anything that anything out of the ordinary. But as Christy mentioned there, if Ronan is in fact in the sea over 20 days, the search would be very wide. So it doesn't have to be directly around the Howth area. Okay, we're thinking on them. On the issue of birth rates, Aquila says a lot of under 35-year-old people were raised in the height of teen pregnancy, moral panic, and were effectively made believe having children ruins your life. Interesting take. Hi, Greg. I got a few quotes to rebuild my defective home. Cannot believe the difference in quotes. Do these contractors not know the pain that people are going through without them ripping them off? Got one very good quote. Well, I'm glad that you did. You are in any open tendering process, you're going to get different costs. And sometimes maybe, you know, you could have a contractor that has fellas and girls waiting to go because they're in between jobs and they think they can squeeze your job in. Others might feel they have to hire in or get new equipment to do it. Or maybe they don't want to work on defective concrete block houses unless there's a premium attached to that. So there are many variables and it's sort of an open tendering kind of a process. But maybe I'm being too forgiving once again. On the triple lock, every other neutral country is a large and powerful military capable of self-defence. Ourselves, on the other hand, are US-UK leeches, expecting them to defend us if we ever get hit due to our strategic location. Right, okay. Now, the end of the school term is nearby. It's nearly here, and school summer holidays are in sight. Where's this blooming weather that normally sickens them? Supermarkets and card shops are crammed with gifts for the best teacher, and any parent who's Googled anything child-related in the last year will be bombarded with Instagram ads for teacher presents. Rather than trying to guess what to get your child's teacher this year to say thank you, we've decided to ask teachers what they really want. Go straight to the source, and you can't go wrong. I'm not going to go through that at the moment because it varies and I think many teachers don't want nothing. Tina McLaughlin's a local primary school teacher and joins us or has accepted our invite into this conversation. Thanks so much, Tina. How are you?
I'm good, Greg. How are you? Good morning to you and all your listeners.
Right, like, I don't know. I'm not sure if there's a one-size-fits-all. I don't want... You see, parents might feel that they're under pressure to get their teachers something, but they should also know that the teachers don't really judge people because they understand their family circumstances better than anyone. But it's still, it's an annual debate, so let's blooming have it, Tina. What's your views on end-of-term presents?
Oh, listen, I'm going to broaden it out, Greg, and I'm going to say teachers and SNAs because they're also... I'm a parent as well as being a teacher, so I guess I'm kind of speaking from both perspectives. And first of all, you're absolutely right. There's absolutely no pressure, no expectation for anything from anybody. It's our job. It's a privilege. You know, it's a very special thing that we have. Some of the nicest things I've ever received is a heartfelt email from a parent towards the end of the year just to say thanks a million for having Greg this year and, you know, have a great summer. That can just really make your day as much as anything else. But I think it's important to remember it's a personal choice. Like, it's the same as anything. There's no pressure or obligation or should be any judgment on anybody that chooses to give a teacher an SNA gift or chooses not to. It is all about choice. And that's a life skill, I guess, as a teacher, and maybe what we call a teachable moment. Not to feel any pressure. If you want to say yes to something, or you want to say no if you disagree with it, just go with your gut and stand over it. And don't judge anybody that chooses different to your choice, I guess is what I'm going to say.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I can imagine one of the nicest things you could receive, you mentioned an email, but also a drawing or something nice from your pupil. I mean, no present's going to change your life, let's be honest with you, in any case. Like, so something like that is something that you can keep with you.
Absolutely. And I mean, like this morning, I teach junior and senior infants, and this morning I received three pictures that the children had made at home for me over the last couple of days. So, you know, it's so special that they spend their time, and it's very important as teachers, you know, that we, you know, take time to be like, wow, my gosh, this is so special, and we hang it up. And it means the world to the child to be like, I did something good. Like, I did, like, it's just that. It's teaching the children about gratitude, and I absolutely adore. I have a wall of pictures that they have drawn or coloured, and it's so special. Older children maybe not so much to do that, but even for a child to write a card or a letter or just, you know, something, draw a picture, and they don't have to do anything. A simple thank you as they walk out the door and head on their summer holidays is more than enough, being honest. I mean, everybody's stretched. You know, as I said, most teachers and SNAs are also parents, so we get it. We're on both sides of it, so. Just don't put any pressure on yourselves. Don't buy into all of the shops and the commercial side of it. It's about gratitude, and it's about being able to say thank you, yeah. or not, if you don't feel like, if it doesn't warrant a thank you. There's absolutely no pressure. I think it's become a thing and it shouldn't have.
Well, you see, that's what I was going to say to you, because, you know, when you get card companies making cards, right, you know, something's been commercialized, and then we talk every year, and I want to strip it right back. We talk every year about pressure parents are under. Are they pressure to provide a gift, right? Are we just part of this commercial machine? Do parents really go, oh my God, I can't go into school today because I've got nothing for Tina? Do you know what I mean? Or are we actually feeding into this?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, like, on the other side of that, I am a parent and I have children in primary school, and I have been the parent who has revoluted somebody money to do a collection, and I've also been the person who has organised the collection. But at no stage have I ever, like, gone through the list and been like, well, Tina didn't contribute, or, you know, it's always voluntary. And the message that goes out, and I hope it's the same for everybody, the message that always goes out is like, listen, if it's something that you want to do, go ahead. But if it's not, you do your own thing. And I feel like, you know, we have to support each other and not be like, oh, you didn't do that. It's not about that. People don't have time to notice who has and who hasn't given you something. I mean, I kind of liken it to, like, I worked in a bar, I worked in a restaurant, I worked in a hair salon, and I've gone to those places as a customer. And sometimes you get a wee tip, sometimes you don't. It doesn't affect you, you know. It may be like, oh wow, that's great, that's, or, you know, you might decide to give somebody a tip, or you might not. It's the same thing. You don't have to, and nobody is like, gosh, that table over there didn't give a tip, you know. You don't. I hope that
no I
makes
I
sense,
do
but that's the way I see it.
The one asterisk I'd put on it is in the areas that you talked of, and there is perhaps an expectation of a tip, whereas I don't believe teachers and SNAs have an expectation. If it comes, it comes. But they have a they have an understanding of, and as I say, you know, over the course of a year, you understand your families.
Yeah.
And you understand
the reality.
You know?
Yeah, and it's the first thing I said, like, you know, as teacher or an SNA, we're in such a privileged position. Like, we get this window into your child's life for a year, sometimes 2 years or more if you're in a small school. And, you know, you really become part of that child and their family's life for this short window. And, you know, sometimes teachers will also give the children gifts, and that's okay too. I think if we remove the choice, then it becomes a problem. You know, it's whatever you feel like yourself. That I think I'll bring it back to, it's all about the choice. And about standing over it, and like, just do your own thing, do you? 100%. And don't mind what
and
anybody
you know
else
what?
Says.
Extend that to your whole blooming life. Just live your life and be who you are. When do you break up?
Yeah.
When do you?
I think somebody said it might be like 12 and a half days. I don't know. It wasn't me that was counting.
Yeah, I think it was 12 and a half days and 5 hours. If I the last I checked.
we finished before rally weekend, so it's So do you know what? It's actually. It's a lovely time of year because you've got your school tour and, you know, you're doing that, lots of nice fun things with the children. If the weather would behave itself now, we would be elected.
Well, in fact, listen, I can imagine, and I want to ask you about that. Literally almost as you're finishing up, there's very strong indications of good weather. So, you know, you could be charging your batteries with vitamin D. Talk to me about that emotional side of it, because, you know, like SNAs and teachers both... become very part of the children's lives, and the children become part of their lives. Where is the biggest emotional pull for the likes of yourself, Tina?
I guess, like, you know, like, not a week goes by that the child wouldn't call me mammy or mum, as I've learned it out. And you could be like in sixth class and that happens as well. It's just, you know, it's such a special bond. We're with them for such a large part of their woken day, you know. I have a huge class of 28, but I try so hard to connect with every single child, as do all the teachers. Like, we're really blessed with the teachers in this country. Like, I say it all the time, you're probably sick of me saying it now, but, you know, our teachers are such a high caliber. You know, they really care about children. You don't enter teaching unless you love children and you love, you know, I have junior infants and senior infants. So, like, from when they start with me and they walk out the door on the 19th of June, it's just the transformation. It's such a privilege to be in the front row and watch that and see how they grow and develop and how you can nurture them. And, you know, it's just such an honor to be in this role. And,
And it's such a big part of their—it's such a big part of their wee lives too, because it's their first little step out into the world on their own, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, like, we don't get it right every day. We can't get it right all the time. Like, no one's infallible. We have to make mistakes. But, you know, I'd like to think that we learn from them and that we keep doing better. And, you know, we're doing a lot with, you know, our hands are tied. As I said, like, we've got big classes and we don't have a lot of resources, but we're doing our best and there's enthusiasm for the job. And I have to say, like, the parents... it's so lovely, the parents, the connection we have with parents. I know when I was at school, like, my parents, my mum would have gone in for a parent-teacher meeting and would have had an end-of-year report, and that was it, unless I was getting into trouble. You know, that was it as far as communication with the school. But I like to think, you know, we're more open now. We see parents all the time. We communicate via email or over the phone, you know. So we have developed this connection, this village with the families of the children that we teach. And, you know, I think that's a real positive thing. And I think that's why you have this lump in your throat as the end of the year comes and you're like, oh, that's the end of this era with this group of children. And, you know, you move on. And but it's lovely. It's lovely. And there's a shortage of teachers, so if anybody's thinking about it.
Yeah, for sure. Listen, come here.
Especially the leaving cert starting today.
I know. Enjoy your last 12 days, 3 hours, 32 minutes and 12 seconds before your summer holidays.
Thank you so much. And will you please have a word with the weatherman and see if the sun will
come out
first
now
as well?
I told you, it is literally almost looking like the sun will have its hat on the day you walk out of the school. So look after yourself, Tina. Thank you.
Oh, you too.
Bye
and thanks
bye.
So much for having me on.
Good luck to you and love to all the kids too. 28 in the class. You know, people might have criticism to teachers. 28 children and doing their absolute best with each and every one of them. And I think too, sometimes, you know, when we talk about, you know, BU, and Tina's quite right, and I love her attitude, what you kind of have to be careful too is maybe if you're well resourced, or even if you're not, don't overdo it either, because, you know, that could be putting pressure on you that you don't need to be under, but also then pressure on other people who feel maybe they have to, you know, match what you're doing. Let's see what listeners think. When did this nonsense of presents to teachers start? Obviously, this will cause trouble of accusations of favouritism down the line. Yep, but it's driven by marketing. What things have become, like Mother's Day, Father's Day, you know, Valentine's Day, and on it goes, Black Friday, you know, Cyber Tuesday. All of these things are generated to try and rinse you out of as much cash as is possible. You know, when expectations are built up over time, and then if you don't meet those expectations, you're the worst in the world. A caller says, these gifts were stopped in our school because the parents were getting out of hand. Now each family's asked for €1, and the teacher is given a voucher for a coffee shop. If there is an S&A, €2 is asked for, and it works great. Indeed. But I'm kind of getting tired of rules having to be introduced to dictate the tiniest little things in our lives. We see it more and more in society, and we see it more and more in government, as if we're big babies that we can't. So we need to start sorting stuff out for ourselves so we don't have constantly have rules and regs to tell us what we can and can't do. A couple before a break on birth rates. Surely it's not about benefits. The most for most of human history, children were workers from when they could walk and therefore bought something in rather than being a drain on the household for 18 years up until modern times. There was always a benefit to children for the family. Men seeing how children are weaponized in family... Okay, I understand where this is coming from. Men seeing how children are weaponized in family courts terrifies some, plus 11,000 abortions last year, must add to all the mix. Cost and lack of housing and caring for children are major influences to I feel. Well, if you are with someone and you think there is a point whereby that child could be weaponized against you in a family court, you need to end that relationship immediately, whether you're a man or a woman. End it immediately. Because if you're with someone and you don't want to have children for that reason, there is a serious problem in that relationship, I would argue. Because that's not the way it should be. And you need to get out, be on your own, or get with someone else that you don't feel like that way with, because that's a problem relationship. If you're concerned about having children because they could end up being weaponized against you in a family court, get out is what I would suggest. On the issue of abortions, you know, abortion was introduced in 2019. Obviously, there's been an 18% drop in the birth rate over the last 10 years. Our abortions... Abortion is certainly, it's going to be in some cases being used as people say, we don't want kids, you know, let's have an abortion. It has to be the case, because where has this figure come from, and the other statistics are there. But I don't believe, or do I? I don't know. I haven't even thought about it. The question is the option of abortion being used as a choice not to have kids? You know, if it wasn't there, would we see more kids? I don't know. What do you think? 0860 25,000. People might say, well, why are you bringing that into it? It's inevitable when you talk about these matters, because people still feel very passionately about it. Now, I have with me two guests. Siobhan McLaughlin, manager of the Donegal Travellers Project. Good to have you back up. It's been a wee while, Siobhan.
Yeah, delighted to be here, Greg, and thank you very much for having us on this morning.
We also have Hugh Friel, Roma Health Coordinator with the Donegal Travellers Project. Good morning to you, Hugh.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
You're more regular recently. It's good to see you again. Now, the Donegal Travellers Project are set to mark their 30-year anniversary with a conference on Thursday, the 4th of June at the Silver Tassie Hotel in Letterkenny. And I'll go to you first, Siobhan. How, I mean, 30 years is a remarkable period of time. I can't believe time is marching as it is. How have things changed over that 30 years?
Well, I mean, we started up here at the mountaintop. Physically, we've changed as an organisation from one office over on the front, which George Bull very kindly at the time rented to us when we had huge difficulty finding premises. We were two settled staff, and we were a women's development project. So now we are a community development, human rights and equality organisation.
And the representation has broadened too, hasn't it?
Yeah, and our staff now is, we have a staff of 38, the majority part-time, but also the majority members of the Traveller or Roma community. And the Traveller and Roma community have taken on leadership roles. They're involved at management level, on the board of management, and delivering all of the services across the county. So our biggest achievement is that we have sustained the community development and human rights works in the county. And we're a fantastic collective of people working together with very strong bonds of solidarity across the whole organisation.
Hugh, what is the commonality that sits the, I suppose, the Irish traveller with the Roma traveller? Why do these two groups sit together?
I think, Craig, firstly, members of my own community, the traveller community, and people get confused, I suppose, or assimilate travellers and Roma as the
ethnic group,
and we're not, you know...
Why the Roma specifically? Is because there are other ethnic groups here, right? So just help me understand.
I think there's a lot of similarities in between our cultures in relation to how we've been treated, I suppose, throughout in Ireland and also in the European countries from the Roma community who have came here. So our cultures is quite similar. And I think because of our background and our heritage and our languages, I suppose, and our traditions, that we're quite similar in that sense. So I think that's why we kind of bound together in terms of our advocacy work, our representation work, and the racism and the discrimination we face. Mm. Now, we have different sets of dialogues in terms of language, in terms of my own language, Kent, and the Romani language. And that's spoken throughout the world with the Roma community. So I think we've been, you know, the leading organisation in this county for BMEs, for travellers, for Roma, mm-hmm. you know. So we've set a lot of milestones.
Right, so specifically, members of the Roma travelling community, specific to that, or that you advocate on behalf of?
Yeah, I think we've seen, you know, I think an injustice for one is an injustice for all, and we've seen that about 25 years ago after the 5 years of the organisation being developed, that, you know, we've seen that the obligation on Donegal Travellers Project as well, and ourselves to, you know, represent and trying to advocate the rights of BMEs in the county, and also nationally, and the Roma community, because nobody was playing that fiddle, if you want to mm-hmm. Advance.
And how big is the Roma community in Donegal?
There's quite a lot of members of the Roma community in Donegal. We have about 750 members of the Roma community, okay. And that's across from Czech, from Romania, from Belgium, from Poland, from Ukraine. We've 66 okay. families or 67 families from Ukraine from the Roma community.
And the reason I ask is because I hear it and I just wanted to understand it, because it just kind of, you know, sometimes you hear the words and you don't necessarily know.
Siobhan? I think it's really important too, in terms of while we are a travel and Roma organisation, we made a very conscious choice about 10 years ago in relation to interculturalism and anti-racism. And many people used to come into our door from black minority ethnic communities looking for support, including Roma. Mm-hmm. And we felt, as Hugh said, that if you're standing on the side of equality and social justice, then we couldn't be exclusionary in our own practice. Mm-hmm. So that's why in the last programme we ran the Build an Intercultural Project, which was about promoting anti-racism, diversity, and promoting the inclusion of BMEs across the county. And then we started playing a strategic role with the Roma community and secured funding to employ a Roma development worker and a Roma health project, because the lessons and the successes and the achievements in terms of human rights and equality with the traveller community were transferable in terms of our knowledge and skills. And the last thing I would just say,
Greg, of course, Sean,
is that... we also played Donegal Intercultural Platform as a result of people coming to looking for support around race and interculturalism. We also supported the establishment of Donegal Intercultural Platform and wrote with them, some of their members, voluntary members, their initial funding applications for the Community Development Project and the Think Equality Project. So we never worked in a silo. We always reached out.
So Hugh, over the 30 years, you know, a lot of work has been done, you know, and a lot of awareness, you know, seen some amazing films made, some amazing annual initiatives, working on integration, you know, artistic displays, loads of other stuff way, way beyond that. But just down to the fundamentals, in terms of a traveller's place in society, or how it's viewed, or how they are... he or she is viewed in society, has there been any positive change, do you believe, over the last 30 years, other than perhaps maybe understanding more about the person or the culture, for what have you? Have things improved?
Yeah, I definitely have, Craig. And I think when I started out, and that's not about me, but other members of the travelling community in Donegal Travellers Project, we really hadn't got a voice in Donegal in relation to representing ourselves as a traveller community.
Because I'll be honest with you, right? Senator Eileen Flynn, for an example, who's a speaker at the conference, is, you know, now a representative in Shannon.
Mm-hmm.
All I see is absolute dog's abuse of her, A, because she's a traveller, and B, because she's a woman. So to the point where she cannot open her mouth
And
without those two things being mentioned. And I wonder, now that, you know, the traveller community is more visible than it has been for quite some time, have we actually seen an improvement? Because I'll be honest with you, if I was a member of the traveller community, I'd need some balls to go up to Dáil Éireann or Shannon, or in fact Donegal County Council. For that matter.
Yeah, but that's the part and the function of who we are. And I think, you know, I condemn any of them the behaviour of individuals, and we're talking about individuals here, or trollers on the social media platforms who do that. But going back to the point, I think that the progression of the members of the Traveller Community and Donegal Travellers Project and the point of our advocacy work and our professional roles within the organisation over the last 30 years, even speaking to you or having interviews with yourselves in Highland Radio or different various functions, like we've been on Midweek, we've been on the Late Late Show, we've been on various different platforms, and I think raising awareness, but also, as you said, at raising that we're professional advocacy community development workers at the table of the agencies as well.
And I think really, you know, the success...
And that took a long time to progress that in relation to accepting our voice at the table.
And I think really, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm speaking from outside the community, you know, the real success will be is when a member of the travelling community is elected to the council or appointed to the Shannon and it's not a news story.
Yeah, I think that's,
you know what
it,
I mean. That it's not a first per se, or excelling. That, in other words, it's easier for members, young members of the travelling community, to continue education. Do you know that? Is that the game? Is that the end game, Siobhan? That becomes.
Yeah, I think that's
less of a novelty.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point. Like, we are our conference celebrating the 30 years history as part of a peace programme, which has been very successfully delivered by Donegal County Council currently. But one of those projects is diversity in decision making.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole project is actually about, because if you look at Donegal County Council, no disrespect to the elected members, they all do their own job very effectively. Mm-hmm. We're looking for a diversification of local government. So that's why we deliver events all over the county about that, the inclusion of traveller and Roma, building capacity among traveller and Roma communities and BME as well, to stand for local election, to stand for participative democracy structures.
And some have got very, very close. Again, I mean, obviously, because it's 30 years, I just wanted to have a broad reflection on where we're at. But now I want to focus on the conference. And talk to me, Siobhan, and I'll switch between the two of you. So talk to me about the conference lineup and where it's at and all that kind of stuff.
Well, we have a fantastic lineup, and we have people coming from all over the country. There are currently 236 people registered to attend tomorrow.
That's huge.
And and we have decided to design it in a culturally appropriate manner. So it's going to be an exhibition space when you enter the Silver Tassie. Want to thank them for all their support in putting it together. And our key speakers are, firstly, Anne Friel is going to talk about the history of Donegal Travellers Project and her achievements and her successes over the last 30 years and the change that you've just queried earlier on in the interview. We then have Anastasia Crickley, who was the chairperson of the UN Committee on Eradication of Racism and Discrimination. And she's going to talk about the importance of travel organisations in Roma. We have Martin Collins, who we've all often seen on TV from Pavy Point, talking about how important it is to have a national policy body, but local people doing policy work on the ground. Importance also of Traveller and Roma partnership and settled partnership, because change is the responsibility of all, and being silent is colluding with racism. Mm-hmm. We then have Liam Herrick, the Chief Commissioner of the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission, and that's a big success for Donegal to get him to come here, and he's going to talk about the importance of human rights legislation. And then moving into the afternoon, I'll skip over just one of the panels. We have a fantastic panel with Senator Eileen Flynn, Dr. Rosalind McDonough and Owen Ward, all nationally recognised artists in their own right, or Senator Eileen Flynn, talking about the importance of the representation of travellers in the arts, public spaces and broader civil and cultural society of Ireland. and we're going to finish off then with a panel of members of the traveller community in leadership roles in DTP, talking about what they see as successes, but their hopes for the next 10 years, because we're very conscious that DTP can't do the same thing all the time, yeah, and it needs to be changing and modernising all the time.
Sure.
And young people need to be coming on board, and we think we've been very good at that, but we need to become even more modern about how we go about business.
This is a fantastic lineup, but also already huge interest. Is it too late for people to register to attend?
Yeah, it is.
What are you doing here then? Right, go on out the two of you.
No, we parked, I think as well, if anybody cancels, it's up an event, right? And a number of people, so there is an opportunity.
So that's actually really good. So you actually have filled the... That's fantastic.
We didn't expect to.
It's actually great to be able... But as you say, that it sounds like you're talking maybe there might be a wait list, so...
There is a waiting list. And it's on Eventbrite and that wait list.
And there's music and all.
Because Johnny Doherty, who's a distant relation of Hugh's, we decided the last hour of the conference, rather than people talking about culture, would actually be a traditional music session. And we have traditional musicians coming. Kevin McGee, who used to be the CEO of DLDC, Gara Ojewini, Mairead's brother, and others. And they're going to be playing Johnny Doherty music. And Trish Riley's travelling from Dublin, a member of the traveller community who had a connection with Donegal. And she's going to be singing songs of struggle as well as our traditional Irish tunes.
Well done. And I suppose it's a rising tide that lifts all boats, because if the life... and inclusion and opportunities for the Roma and travelling communities, the Roma travelling and Irish traveller community, if I could put it like that, then it is people from other minorities as well would obviously by default benefit, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Anything else? Sorry, go ahead.
I'd just like to finish on, for us, the pride that we have in the achievements and successes of Donegal Travellers Project. Mm. We would, and without sounding conceited, be considered one of the strongest organisations around the country.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
That is due to the commitment of the traveller community
the
and the Roma.
I think that's quite important.
The participation, we were going through the photographs yesterday and today, and the participation of traveller and Roma communities all over this county.
I would say, you look
incredible.
Through those pictures, you could probably track the receding hairline, Hugh.
We were just saying that.
Who's that young fella?
I was just saying to Siobhan this morning, like it's definitely changed my life, because I started when I was 19. I was on the side of the road in Milford in Donegal.
Trav Art.
I started Trav Art. I've changed my education outlook and
those parts
of
it.
Somebody
to
believe in you. Yeah. Somebody to actually believe in you.
For sure.
And Siobhan believed that I could go places I couldn't write and read at that time. I have a son now in the college as a lecturer. I have a daughter as a manager in social care, residential social care. I have another daughter in care as well, health setting. So it's about... not only from my family, but it's changed the lives of other families as well, traveller families in the county. And the importance and the advocacy of education and the outcome of equality, and that we can represent, talk to the board of management of the schools, talk to the principals, talk to the teachers, and stop that inequality that's happening to traveller children within the education system, so they can arise to what they want to be in and have that belief in, Greg. And I think that's the most important thing over the last 30 years.
It's like the start of the exams today. It's just to give everyone the opportunity to be the best version of themselves that they can possibly.
And, there are young travellers doing their leaving cert and junior cert, which 20 years ago there would have been very few.
Mm-hmm. Listen, thank you both of you. Good luck with tomorrow.
Thank you very much.
Siobhan McLaughlin, manager of the Donegal Travellers Project, and Hugh Friel, Roma Health Coordinator with the DTP. Both of you, thank you very much. And as I say, enjoy tomorrow.
Thanks, Ben and Greg.
A wonderful day. Lots of you messaging in on the various topics we've been discussing. I'll get to those shortly. But I want to say good morning now to Niall McHugo, who's founder of Breathe Work Project. Is it Breath Work or Breathe Work? Sorry.
Yeah, Breath Work Project. Thanks, Greg. Okay. Appreciate it. Great to be here.
Nice to talk to you. Right. So what is the Breath Work Project?
Yeah, it's a company I founded a couple of years ago. And it was due to something I discovered through going extremely low in my life. I was a primary school principal. I'd gone through a marriage breakup. There was a lot going on in my life. And I think I was sort of done with talking about my problems. I was talking to a lot of therapists all at once, but I needed to go up to a deeper level. And then I discovered this breathwork called Conscious Connected Breathwork with a guy from Galway called Pat Dively. So eventually then I trained with Pat became a conscious connected breath worker, and because I realized it worked for me, and I just loved doing it, and I loved the, you know, how it helped me. So after that, then I trained, and like I said, I formed my company then, and now I go around and do breath work with communities, GA clubs, all sports clubs, corporate schools, individuals. So yeah, it's something
your
really
situation and how you might benefit was obvious. There's an awful lot of people walking around content with mediocrity or feeling okay. Exactly. You know, that is their norm, and they believe, well, that's just what my life is. That's normal, right? And you know, this may or may not benefit those people. I presume for the most it would. So, how does this work in the short time that we have, Niall? What is the mechanic?
Yeah, and I think what you said there about people doing that, I think a lot of people are on masks as well and pretend things are okay, but deep down they're holding a lot of trauma in their bodies. So what it is, I suppose the difference is what people always ask me, what is breath work? And they have no idea. See, what we unconsciously breathe about 22,000 breaths per day, and we don't know we're doing it. We just do it to survive. But breath work is actually consciously breathing and slowing your breath down. So if you're breathing, we'll say 12 to 20 breaths per minute, by simply just even breathing in through your nose for 5 and out for 5, that's 10 seconds. You've automatically brought your breath down to 6 breaths per minute. So and then what that does is that calms your nervous system.
I've actually seen in the hospital setting, what's remarkable is the immediate impact to low oxygen levels.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's I retrained then as well with Patrick McKeown, the Oxygen Advantage, and he's all about the science of breath, and hence that's why I go into football teams and sports teams and work with a couple of county teams at the moment, and it's all about that. It's about oxygen efficiency, you know, and getting, yeah, it's just about getting, and what that does is it's better oxygen delivery. It calms your nervous system on the pitch, so you better sleep and also better recovery. And if you can do that, and the key is just calming your body down. And when you're calmer, you make better decisions. And you know, and loads of Djokovic is a big advocate for breath work. You might see Haaland, Ronaldo, all the top athletes, even Rory McIlroy. You know, he talks a lot about it.
You see them just about to take the biggest pot of their lives. If they're a golfer, and what do? It's all about getting in that moment. And so, Niall, how do people find out more information? Do you generally do sort of like, is it group work with companies, one-on-one work? Like, how do people find out more about the types of services you offer, your company offers?
Yeah, I do. If they look up the breathworkproject.ie, but I do that, like I said, I'm with some county GA teams at the moment. I do corporate work, schools, one-on-ones, and then I work in a few places, Balroddery Heritage Centre near Balbriggan in Dublin, also in Duleek, Four Swans Therapy Centre in Duleek, and then I'm based in Balbriggan. I'm from Virginia and Cavan. So, like, I get around, and I work in a gym down in Cork as well. So, like, there's different places I travel around because I'm really, like I said, I'm passionate about helping people, and I feel it's just such benefits. And I think it's something that will be huge. I think it's like they always talk about margins, you know, in sport. And I think this is definitely the next margin. And Patrick McKeown says in the next 5 years, breathwork is going to be the thing everybody will want.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, because if it's the extra couple of percentage for someone at the very elite level of, say, for instance, responsibility of fitness, look at the benefit could have for the rest of us a little bit further down. Fascinating stuff. Thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate that. Check out the Breathwork Project. That's Niall McHugo there. Back tomorrow morning at 9. Have a great day, everyone.